finished the race, and Bobby and I, you know, since we sat on him the entire time, he had no idea what he was doing. You know, he didn't know that you were supposed to trade off poles. He just thought, I'll just keep going until no one's left. So Bobby and I eventually get away from it the last minute, and I forget what it was, but I said something after the finish line. I was just like, man, that kid was dumb. Something like that. And that kid overheard me say that kid was dumb. So all of a sudden, after I finish this race, I'm getting chased around the parking lot by some kid who I have no idea who it is with big triathlon arms saying that he's going to, you know, put my head through a windshield of the car. And that's how I met Lance Armstrong.
Oh, that is phenomenal.
Classic.
Yeah. That's right, Tuttle. It's the tune from a movie that came out 30 years ago.
That I whistle to myself every time I'm on my bike.
Absolutely. And the tune and the movie,
yes,
put a lot of us boys out there shaving our legs.
Got us way overly excited about riding bicycles.
Absolutely. Wearing black shorts, yeah, and buying skinny, tired bikes.
My 33-year-old in the Navy dad was not happy when I was shaving my legs. Not happy at all.
The movie, which put cycling on the map and made it cool and sexy, Breaking Away, is celebrating its 30th anniversary, and joining us, the star of that movie, the gentleman who played Dave Stoller, Mr. Dennis Christopher, joins us. Dennis, how are you?
Cool and sexy.
Dennis, you are all of that and more. That is so nice.
On wheels.
There you go. That is so cool. Dennis, thank you so much for taking time to join us.
I'm glad to be here.
We are very, very excited. Can you believe it's been 30 years?
No, I was kind of shocked when I heard the intro. We're just under the wire. Come on.
I know. We're pushing it a little bit. We're pushing it. We're just into 09.
January 1 o'clock. You know.
That is great. So,
but no, it's a long time. Yeah, absolutely a long time. I don't know. It's one of those things that seems like a dream at this point.
Dennis, were you an athlete growing up? Was
no,
it?
No, definitely not. Just the opposite.
Really?
You're kidding me.
I got to live out. I got to train and live out all my athletic fantasies on film while I was getting a paycheck.
You know what's amazing about that to me, and I'm sure Huddle's the same way. What makes movies, I think, stand the test of time is when they're authentic. If you look at some of those old baseball movies, and the guys don't look like they have a clue. But in that film, I mean, you are authentic. You are a real. You look like a real cyclist. Did you? How much training did you do to do that?
How does someone who's not an athlete get on a set of rollers?
Yeah.
Well, I had my tricks, but they had me training. I was on a picture before that, and I was actually 3 weeks late for the shooting of Breaking Away. And every time I was not in a scene in another movie, I was on rollers or working with the bike. But the thing that really helped me the best is they had a body double, a great, great cyclist named Gary Rybar, who was going to be competing in the Olympics, but we didn't participate in the ones that year.
Oh, that's right, in 1980, yeah. Boycotting, yeah.
And he was going to do a lot of the work, a lot of the stuff, which I wasn't completely happy about. So I threw myself into it. In those days, they used to think that they could make you into this. And after about 3 weeks of training before we started the picture, I realized that that was a lie and that I could no more make myself into a cyclist as these guys could make themselves into an actor like that.
Right.
So what I did is I studied the way it looked, the way it, the breathing, how the breathing was, how the face looked. I matched a sway that Gary had to his head to the left and right in the long shots so they could cut from me doing that right to a long shot of him doing it, you know, at the proper speed. In back of the truck when I was in the wind draft in back of the truck, I actually did that, but you had a panic-stricken actor on a bike that weighed as much as a pretzel being pulled in this wind draft behind this truck and not knowing what I was doing and not really being able to slow down or stop. So they threw me in there, and A lot. I'd say 95% of the footage in the movie is actually me doing the stuff. So
wow.
They were pretty happy with it. We were very lucky with it. But I credit that to knowing what it is an athlete looks like, knowing what a training looks like on the face, in the body, in the posture, with the breathing. And once I got that, and once I was mimicking the man that was doing my long shots, and we like came to a meeting, him and I, in the middle, we were able to sell it as very authentic.
So my question then is, did the body double get the pleasure of getting the spoke in the wheels and flying into the ditch, or was that you?
I did that.
You got to fly into the ditch.
Yeah, there was a thing that happened on the second day of shooting where I have to pick up the notebook of the girls.
Yes.
And they all told me, Gary said, impossible, can't do it, I can't even do it. This is one of those things that Steve just wrote, and Steve said, Steve Tessich, who was also a bike champ in school. He said, oh, Steve just wrote that. Steve even said it's impossible. And not knowing it wasn't impossible, I did it, fooling around while we were waiting and setting up the shot.
Really?
And every time after that, don't know why, I did have a thing so that there was a stone or something that was holding up the one page, the cover of the notebook, so I could grab it. You know, it wasn't like flat.
Sure.
But aside from that, I did that and did a lot of the stuff in it. I guess it was just beginner's luck. I'm good when the camera's rolling.
That's amazing.
That's so great.
That is amazing.
You know, some of the long shots, I was looking at the movie a little while ago, and there's a lot of scenes, if you see in the cross-country stuff with the Italians.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of it is coming downhill, and it's in rain, but they have a filter on it to make it not look like it's raining. And I remember on the first pass of that really long shot of seeing the bikes all come down the hill, and
yep.
beautiful shot, they threw me in there with them. And the thing that I never knew about that kind of when you're biking on the road is that there's all kinds of debris all over the road.
Yes, there is. It's crazy.
Rocks and all kinds of stuff. And as I say, you're on those racing rims.
Yep, very narrow ribs.
On this Mozzie, you know what I mean? That, again, weighs as much as a pretzel.
Right.
And I was taking my lumps, and just many shots on the first take, I was kind of just trying to stay alive. And then we'd get off the bike and say, what the hell is going on? You've got to clear the road!
Oh, that is...
Pick up the stones. I was picking up the stones before the second take, so I wouldn't go down.
Oh, my God. But with the scene where you do get the pump in your spokes, so did you have to fly off the bike?
I did one where I flew off the bike, and they had sort of pads and stuff in the thing. I kind of launched myself over the front handlebars. But they also had a stunt double doing that as well.
As well they should.
As well they should, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how did you...
Without the mattresses on the ground. You know, that kind of...
Of course. Why do you need mattresses? You got to make it authentic. So how... One of my biggest questions is, you were able to transmit a passion for cycling to all of us, and all of us that felt a passion for cycling, you know, it was immediately, you know, felt. Were you into cycling? I mean, or were you just studied? Was this just work? Because, boy, you know, I'd always want to hear, what I want to hear from you is, oh, yeah, I was really into it. I knew all about cycling and the Tour de France and all this stuff.
Yeah, of course you do. Of course you do. I think the authenticity comes not trying to whip yourself into some sort of incredible shape, but to take the character and what they do and where they are in the sport, again, as I say. And that, to me, is respecting the role and respecting the sport, because you can't make yourself an athlete in 2 or 3 weeks of training.
Right.
I couldn't have become that boy in 2 or 3 weeks, and every attempt to do it would just be awful and a lie to the character. So that's why I say I did a lot of that stuff. I just wasn't doing it as fast as they said that I was doing it.
Sure.
As the illusion made it happen. But I'd say my exposure to bikes before that was I worked in and live in Manhattan, and as a kid I would drive my bike to work in Manhattan. And I've always had a bike in my life and still do to this day.
Also, you're still ride a bike.
Yeah, I'm nothing like Dave Stoller, though.
Hopefully not in Manhattan anymore. No.
And I still got the Mozzie.
Oh, do you still
really?
Have that bike?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you got to bring that thing down.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a classic.
Yeah, it's still there hanging on the wall, upside down in the hallway. But I rode it for a few years after the film, and it was just, you can't ride that on the street. You really can't.
Too skinny.
So I brought it in and had it restored, and it's just been here ever since.
Now, Dennis, when I look at the cast in that film, when there were Dennis Quaid and Daniel Stern especially, all of you were young actors, and that movie, did it surprise you, one, the acceptance of the film, and two, the guys you were working with? Well, it seemed like there was such a great camaraderie with the actors.
Definitely.
Yeah, there was. Well, Dennis Quaid and I were great friends before that. We had done a film before this movie together, and I knew him and his wife real well at the time.
Right.
What's amazing about the movie is the writer was an immigrant and the director was an immigrant. I mean, it's a classic American film at this point, if I'm allowed to
absolutely
go that far. And a classic American sports movie as well. But both of these guys are immigrants, and it was the way they viewed America, the way Steve Chesich viewed that sport here in America, where they were able to tell an American story with a lot more facet and a lot more love and a lot more attention to detail and, like you say, authenticity. I think that's why the movie succeeded so well, so very well. But we had a great camaraderie with the guys. Like I was telling you before, though, I arrived 3 weeks late, and a lot of the scenes were blocked, and they had already rehearsed everything. So in many ways, I had to jump right in.
Did you, after that film came out, did you have a lot of people coming up to you who were like, oh, my God, I got my first bicycle because of you, and shaved my legs
like
because
Gavin
of you,
and
parents wanting to beat you up because their kids are shaving their legs?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that was like a huge pass for the whole anybody that was interested in biking, because you could say you didn't have to explain it anymore.
That's right.
Everybody knew it because, again, if I can say, everybody saw this movie when it came out.
Everybody.
And it was embraced by everybody, older people, parents, kids, everyone. That's another rare quality in a movie. Also, it was one of the first in a group of pictures that made stories about adolescent characters all right for adults to go and see.
So at the time of the film, you're like, what, 24, 25 years old?
No, I was like, 20, 21?
I was going to say, you look like you're 12.
Yeah.
Really
No, I was 20, 21. Something.
Oh, really? Okay. So you're 21 years old, and you're nominated for Golden Globe, Best Young Artist for Breaking Away. I mean, so much is happening as a young guy. For you and your career, how important was that film for you?
Oh, it was huge. It was huge. It was an introduction. It was the best introduction that you could have to the business, because people really embraced the movie, took it to their heart, and it, as far as my career was concerned, it defined to the industry, which I was trying to break into.
You're right.
It defined me in a way of being involved in a quality picture, of doing something that was completely believable, of creating a world. I mean, there wasn't a lot of tricks in that movie.
No.
It was the interpersonal relationship between the actors and that incredible script. And, I mean, Steve Tesich, rest his soul, he was a lauded playwright. So he really knew how to tell a story, a small, very well-told story with really great actors in it. The mother and the father, too, Barbara Barry and Paul Dooley. It all came together very magically. And I think the key ingredients was when I was saying that these two men being immigrants, there was a movie after this that Steve did, American Flyer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
About American bike
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it didn't have the touch of the European feel of someone that was in love with Italians and with Italian bike racing and was going to recreate that reality in America somehow, no matter what, and how wacky that would come out, how strange that would be. And when you said cool and sexy, that's the part that made bicycling cool and sexy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Singing to the girl, you know, talking about we need to have a big family. There's a lot of romance underneath all
right.
of that, you know? And I think that's what made this sport human to so many people and made people fall in love with it. And once they got on a bike, then they knew what it was all about, you know, because all you have to do is go out on a great day on a bike and...
It changes everything.
You've got it, man.
It changes everything.
Totally
it just makes...
got it, you know.
Hey, Dennis, have you had any contact from the professional cycling world, the cycling industry? Because I'm sure you've inspired guys who have gone on to do big things in cycling.
Boy, I'm really bad. There's, I live in New York, and you're catching me in California right now, and there's something I have in the office that was a bicycling magazine that I was on the cover of.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But it was funny. There was no real follow-up after that. I had read something that Lance Armstrong, early interview with Lance Armstrong, where he, before he had the other six jerseys to talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said that the movie was an inspiration for him, and it's what made him really want to get up there on the bike, and I always thought that was tremendously cool.
Because you think about it, Babbitt, I mean, this movie is on the front end of really the cycling movement.
No question.
You know, right on the front end of...
No, it totally is. You know, I was just saying the other day, the first Earth Day, forget this, this is how old I am, the first...
We're older than you are, buddy.
Doesn't matter. Congratulations, Ben.
That's right.
I say. The first Earth Day, all right? The first Earth Day. I pedaled up Pennsylvania Avenue with a bill and delivered it to the White House. But I stopped at the stage on the stage and spoke to all the people at the very first Earth Day in Washington, D.C., and then changed out of my spandex. Well, it wasn't spandex in that day.
It was wool.
The tight wool, absolutely,
right.
with the chamois inside.
Yep,
yep.
And changed out of that into a suit because I was going in to present this bill to the Vice President, Mondale.
Yeah.
That created the bike lanes, the beginning of bike lanes in America.
Wow.
Oh, very cool.
So that's the influence. That's, you know what
that's,
I mean?
That's how powerful that film was. Absolutely.
How it all sort of came together to America in a perfect storm at that point. The whole impact of bicycling, Earth Day, the Earth, you know, these lanes, the whole thing. So it was more influential than I think we give it credit for.
And it was the type of film that, like you mentioned, the storylines, there's so many different storylines, but they're in the film, your dad, not
the parents.
Not support, the parents were amazing.
Yeah.
And they
How
did,
about Jackie O'Haley and Amy Wright in that little romance that they
oh,
had?
Oh, Moocher, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
Yep,
holy
that was
cow.
So cool.
Yeah, yeah. Moochie, like... doing bench presses. When he was bench pressing and
the greatest. That's, you know, I read the script and they didn't have any descriptions of what the people were like. And I went to the first reading,
yeah.
Which is at a table where you sit down
sure.
and you have the reading of the thing. And I thought, well, which guy's Moocher? Thinking I'm going to see this guy.
Right.
You know? And because I already knew what Dennis looked like,
because
we were buddies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, wait, what? Who? And he started reading the thing, and I thought, Peter Yates is a genius.
Yeah,
he's a friggin' genius. The little Moocher guy with the big machismo thing going on.
Yep.
And that's how it was with all the casting, because I think if you read this, just cold. I mean, it was called Bambino at first.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, and there was weird things, you know. I mean, like, I was getting in a van with some hippies or something and smoking pot, and I had a collapsible bike because I took it everywhere. There was some pretty strange stuff in this original script of this movie. I just lost where I was.
Oh, you were talking about the film was called Bambino.
Yeah. It was called Bambino. So it... What distinguished it was when they actually got to the final script and you saw the people that Peter had cast in these roles. You know, Dennis Quaid in his role. It just wasn't all normal casting. Daniel Stern was a bit
Daniel
off.
Stern
Daniel
was
Stern.
Awesome.
Everybody was just a bit off center, you know, and it was
absolutely
perfect. And again, it led to more authenticity.
So don't forget, Babbitt, don't forget to punch the clock.
Shorty.
Shorty, yeah.
Oh, my God, that movie was so... So when you read the script, you knew.
I had no idea. I was a busy actor at that point, and I was working on another movie that I thought was really important.
And what was that? What movie were you working on?
It was called The Last Word, and it was wonderful. It was with Richard Harris and
wow.
I don't know if you remember him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Karen Black and a girl that was nominated for an Academy Award, Penelope Milford.
Yeah.
And I. So it was kind of a big deal at the time. But anyway, I got this movie, and they wanted me to. I'll tell you a better story.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went in for the interview, they have these pre-interviews for movies where, like, stars go in.
Sure.
Before they open it up and read other people. In fact, I don't even think they read other people anymore these days.
No, they just...
You know
just,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all kind of... Anyway.
Yeah.
Packaged and stuff. So I'm somehow called in for some reason, and I'm sitting outside this office, and there's these, like, actors over there that are kind of famous, you know, at the time.
Sure.
And I go in, and I read for Cyril.
Right.
And for Cyril.
I don't, Danny Stern's character.
Right, yeah.
I actually don't even read. I walk in the room, they go, Dennis, and they give me these hugs, and they say, we're going to be having a great time in Bloomington in the summer. You're playing Cyril. It's a great part. We'd seen you in these other Altman movies, and we wrote this part with you in mind. I'm thinking, I've had to fight for every part I've ever gotten in my life. They're writing something for me. And I was meant to play Cyril. That was it. And then they asked me to stay for the next 3 days as they read. Three guys every 20 minutes, half an hour, would come in and read. But I always read Cyril because I was cast as Cyril.
Sure.
And one day, the guy that was coming in to read Dave, the part that I eventually played, he was late. And the people were piling up in the offices because they had these three people paired, all three and three and three. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I made the fourth one. So they were piling up, so they said, please, would you mind, you've been reading it now, and you kind of know the seat. And I said, yeah, I'll read Dave, too. I'll read Dave and Cyril.
Oh, did both of them?
Yeah. So, we, you know, to keep the flow of the other audition going, you know, the other guys would come in. And the first time I did it, they went, huh? And I don't think they even watched the poor guys that were auditioning because they just went, wait a second. And after they left... They said, well, would you do that again? And I did it again. And it turned out that they wanted me for Dave. Now, they didn't say anything. The script arrives, and the deal memo's been made through my agent. I'm committing to do this huge movie. I mean, it was like an independent movie, but it was being produced by 20th Century Fox. And they say, and I still think I'm playing Cyril. And I get this script, and it says, Dave. And the contract that I've signed didn't have the name of the character filled in.
Right.
So I'm committed to do this movie. And I read it, and it's all this leg-shaving stuff and talking Italian stuff. Because at the audition, it was just a couple of pages.
Right.
It was just like a little tiny scene. And I said to my agent, I said, I don't want to play this part. No one can play this part. This is a caricature. This guy sings opera, and he just starts hugging... mailman, and you know what I mean? He's shaving his legs, and he's talking like this to his friend. You talk about inauthentic. I was thinking, this is like a joke.
Right.
No one can do this and get away with it. And she said, I'm sorry, it's too late. You're doing the movie. And...
You know, and plus you got to ride the bike.
I can't believe what, I mean, that's amazing.
So I get there. I'm late, as I say, 3 weeks late because I couldn't get off of this other movie. I go on the red eye down there. I get off the plane. I dump my bags in the hotel. They take me out to this set. They take me into hair and makeup. I'm going to shoot that day. They dye my hair dark brown, almost black, put me in a tight band-line shirt, unbuttoned almost down to my navel, spray tanned me all over like some orange color, skin-tight black pants, black boots, gold chains hanging around the neck. That's how they thought.
Oh, my God.
He was imitating an Italian. I go in, I shoot the scene in the cafeteria with the girl the first time, with the whole thing, with the fight in the background, and, you know, the whole thing. And it's... horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm exhausted, so I'm a kid. I don't say anything. They dressed me up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. You're getting paid. You got a job.
I know the lines, kind of, you know what I mean? And I'm there. And but I look like this, I don't know. Remember when Lily Tomlin did that man?
Yes, with her hair greased back.
I looked exactly like Lily as that character. It was horrifying. And I thought... all that night I was in the hotel, I couldn't sleep, I was flipping out, I was thinking, this is not real, this guy doesn't have any friends, you know what I mean? He doesn't have three regular guys if his hair's all greased back and he's got a spray, but, you know, a spray tan that, of course, was supposed to be a real tan, you know what I mean, kind of thing, and he wears all this gold jewelry. I mean, I look like a reject from Saturday Night Fever. But that's what they wanted me to do. And we shot a lot of footage like that the whole day. And the next day I came in and I, like, bawled. And I said, I can't do this. I was flipping out. And the director said, yeah. Go home and go to sleep. Go back to the hotel, go to sleep. We're coming over later in the afternoon. They said, so what were you thinking? And I said, he should look like American who's really trying to be Italian to make him. He said, but what happens in the big reveal when you tell the girl that you're not Italian? I said, I'll just change my voice.
Right.
You know what I mean? Suddenly, you know, that's what I'm essentially going to be doing anyway. You know, and it just came out a little bit better than if I was being a guy that was trying to be pretend to be a New York Italian.
Yeah, you sound like, hey, well, you know, no, what's going on? How about a little pizza?
Yeah, they were expecting that he was going to be like this laugh riot, this like Fonzie kind of, hey,
what's
going on?
Mike,
yeah, what do you know?
Paisan, let's go for a ride.
Paisan, come on. Let's get some gabagol and sit down. And, you know, but little does everybody know, I am Italian. I mean, my last name is Corelli. And I had spent time living over there a little bit.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that helps.
Then it was a gimme then. Yeah.
I worked in a Fellini movie. I worked for Federico Fellini in a film.
Oh, wow.
When I was a kid.
Wow.
So the one of the cruxes of the movie is the race that you end up at the Little 500.
Yeah.
And it's based on that, the Phi Kappa Psi.
Yeah.
And that race looked so authentic and so crazy.
Yeah.
And was it?
It was really friggin' crazy because the guys were all, you know, from the Little 500, except for me and the three guys, Danny and Dennis and Jackie. There was Hart Bochner and his team, you know, the guys from the school. And they'd throw us out there with these guys. And, I mean, there's plot points, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Certain people are supposed to win certain things.
Right.
Certain people are supposed to come in second and third. And, you know, they'd, like, start the race. And these guys would take off like crazy, you know. And,
they're racing.
And we're going, what the hell, you know, like, come on. So I just looked at this and I said, you know, forget about it. Where's the frame? I'd been in movies before, you know. I said, where's the frame? Where are you going to start picking us up? And I, you know, moved us up to where we were right out of frame. And, you know, so we finally got it that way. Knowing, again, how to make the illusion of sports look real rather than throwing everybody out there and trying to do it. And all these guys wanted to win like crazy.
Of course they did.
They had to be talked down and, you know. Had to be sprayed down and say, hey, this is a movie here. You can't all win the race. These actors have got to kind of try and win.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, we were out there doing that stuff. They had a cameraman that was sitting on the back of a Harley.
Yeah, filming you guys.
Shooting that thing, yeah, with a big magazine. You know, with those old cameras, not a Steadicam.
Right.
The
whole camera that usually sits on the thing.
Yep.
They'd lift that right off, put it on his shoulder, and he was riding around.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
You know,
stuff.
You know what was so cool about that whole thing was the mounts and the dismounts were hilarious.
Oh, especially
Moocher.
Moocher
and
Cyril.
Cyril almost died.
We were just doing it. We were doing it the best we could. And the couple of spills that I took in that race, I really did take them too.
That is funny. So. Cyril had his gardening gloves on. Remember?
That's right.
I loved him with his gardening gloves.
Yeah.
That was such a classic.
Yeah, I'm a lucky guy, you know, to be in a movie that people just love so much is just a real blessing. Gotta tell you.
Well, and we're excited with our competitor film festival. That's going to be our anchor film on the 30th evening.
Well, you know, we also can't forget. I did a surfing movie called California Dreamin'. Where I'm up on that damn surfboard doing comedy, and Chariots of Fire, too.
Chariots of Fire,
tell us your role in Chariots of Fire.
Recreating the
we love Chariots
Olympics,
of Fire.
So, yeah.
What? Which role did you play in Chains?
The American runner, the one that was favored to win.
Oh yeah.
If you know any history about that, he's quite an amazing character. He was one of the first stuntmen ever. He ended up being one of the first stuntmen ever. And after the Olympics, went to Hollywood because they said, what are you going to do? They actually went down on the field and said, what are you going to do after the Olympics, Charlie? He said, I'm going to Hollywood. And he went out there, and he was quite a ladies' man, and he practically invented the whole idea of a stuntman.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, I know that.
Dennis, so your career starting, it looks like you started like in the early 70s?
Oh, I think in the 40s.
No, you started.
I'm doing a Benjamin Button. I've started old and I'm going backwards.
Love that. Love that.
So now, what was your question?
Well, you started so young.
Yeah.
And you're still doing it. You still love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just finished a movie last week with Noah Wiley and Tana Fredericks for Henry Jaglom called Queen of the Lot.
Oh.
It's a Hollywood, an insider Hollywood story.
Now, like you said, when you read the script, you don't really know at that point how great it is or how well the movie's received. Have there been times where you've read a script and go, oh my God, this is can't miss, and then it's sort of a bomb, and then other times you're like, I don't know about this one, and it turns out to be great?
I think actors read scripts differently. I mean, of course you can tell when it smells. You don't have to read to know that it stinks. But you can never know because so much happens when the movie's being made and the vision of the director. I mean, it's really where the director and the writer meet, and the director can really influence the film. And I guess, like what you said, make a turkey into something that's different. I guess it's just what you focus on. Whether you focus on the interpersonal relationship and the...
Sure.
I don't know. It's hard to tell. You know, this movie was like lightning in a bottle. You know, just so many things about this movie came together so great. And the timing, the innocence was accepted. And the thing that's amazed me about the picture is that people still love it.
Oh.
You know, that means that people have come up to me now and said, I've watched it with my son.
See, that's
and
cool.
I just go, yeah, and my son loves it.
Yeah.
So that's why I say I'm like a lucky guy, because it's just been around for a while. I don't know. I think it will be around for a while.
No, well, it's like the eighth best sports movie of all time by Sports Illustrated.
There you go.
Well, and when you, like you said, when you were filming it, you're filming little pieces.
Did we know it was going to be a hit? No.
And when you watched it for the first time.
I had no time to think.
Right. No, but when you watched it for the first time, did it surprise you how good it was?
Oh, yeah, I think I bawled. I was with my dad, who was having the big C, cancer, and he had come up to see it, and we had always been at odds our whole life. I was emancipated at 17 and got out of the house, and had to have judges and lawyers and stuff and all that kind of stuff figure it out to get away. So it was a really nice coming around, and I saw it the first time I saw it. I saw it with him sitting next to me, the man that always thought that I was a bum, like that father in the thing. Because Paul had a father very much like my dad.
Yeah.
And he had a father very much like the man that he played in the movie. So he understood me, my character, because he used to be my character.
Yeah,
he used to have a dad just like the one that he played.
Right.
And so did I. So we had a nice chance to establish this relationship. So I'm seeing this with my father, who's now beginning, you know, the long march to the sea. And it was very moving. It was very, very moving because he heard me call him things that I had only called my own father, you know.
Right.
He heard me say daddy to Paul Dooley, you know.
Right.
And I'd only ever called one person daddy in my whole life, and that was him. So it meant a lot the first time I saw it. I was kind of flabbergasted. I knew it was a hit because, you know, they were, you know, having us do publicity and getting us out there, and the word was out.
That's so cool.
Word was definitely out about the movie. So, but to see it for the first time with him was just a special night for me.
You know what word came from that movie, Babbitt, that is, I see it all the time, even now, is what? Cutters.
Cutters, absolutely.
Yeah, Cutters, there's always a Cutters team at Muddy Buddies.
Yes.
There's Cutters. You always
there
see
are.
Cutters everywhere.
And
it's such a great term.
That is so funny.
We were the junkyard dogs of that town.
Absolutely. Now, you did a Law & Order with Paul Dooley?
Oh, we've done three things.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah, we did a Robert Altman movie called A Wedding, where we were father and son. He was married to Carol Burnett.
Okay.
So he and Carol were my father and mother. Mia Farrow was my sister. Then later we did the Law and Order. We also did another show where he was a priest father and I was his congregant.
That is wild.
So we always have these connections, he and I. And we were horrible villains in Law & Order. It was really, really fun. We were just two sick old dudes, father and son. It was great.
I love it. Hey, Dennis, thank you so much for taking so much time.
Oh, this has been fun.
We really, really enjoyed it. And we are so excited to have you down for the film festival and for the Competitor Gala. I hope you have a wonderful time when you're down here.
Bring your bike.
thanks. Have a great night, and thanks for the entrance.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hello to everybody out there. Keep training.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dennis.
Bye.
Appreciate it.